If you've decided to chase that rabbit down that rabbit hole, found our link, clicked on it, and pressed play, then yes, you have found your destination. And that destination is the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie Podcast. In today's episode, I will be interviewing Miss Melissa Ramondi. For those of you in the social media world, you will better know her as Lissa with Raw Food Romance. Lissa is a champion from the raw vegan movement. Her story is one of overcoming addictions, both food and alcohol. It's a very touching story, it's a very moving story, and I'm excited to share it. Lissa can be found all over social media. She has an Instagram page, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube channel, Snapchat, and also has several wonderful, wonderful recipe books, all of which include raw vegan meals. Miss Melissa Ramondi will also be known as Miss Melissa Maris soon, as she has been engaged to her love, Mr. Nate Maris. For those of you who think that name sounds familiar, that's Raw Natty Nate. So soon, we will be able to enjoy that raw vegan power couple. And boy, are they a match made in heaven. So sit back, relax, and let's listen to Lissa tell her story. I'm excited to hear it. I know you will be too. Let's invite Lissa in. Hello, everyone, and I have the lovely and gracious Miss Lissa with Raw Food Romance in the house. How are you, young lady?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm really excited for this one, for sure.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I had Nate on my first ever interview, your beloved Nate, and you are my second interview, so I cannot honestly think of a better, more, I don't even know how to explain it. Just a wonderful opportunity for me to have two of my heroes, my first two podcasts. I couldn't ask for anything
better. Oh, thank you so much. We are so honored.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Well, before we get started, we do a little thing called the hot seat. And so I'm going to put Lissa in the hot seat. You get four questions. And the only thing that I ask is that you be as honest as possible and you answer as quickly as possible. You don't get any lifelines, no help, anything. You just got to answer them right off the top of your mind.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
All right. Number one, what's in your freezer right now?
Oh my God. There's some old frozen bananas from when Nate was here last, and some frozen peaches and frozen pineapple. And I think there's some frozen broccoli, but I'm not sure. I think that's it.
That's awesome, girl. That's about right. You got frozen bananas from when Nate was here. Okay, number two. This one's a little more deep. If you had the entire world's attention for 30 seconds, and only 30 seconds, and you had to say one thing, what would it be?
Oh, my God. I would say, let's all practice more compassion. Compassion towards animals, compassion towards the planet, compassion towards ourselves by choosing healthy food, and compassion towards our other human beings. Stop the bullying. Stop the eating the animal products. Let's clean up this earth and be compassion.
See, I knew you would come through. I knew.
That
was the perfect question. I knew it. All right. This one's a little sillier. What is the stupidest thing you've done on a dare?
Oh.
If you can tell.
On a dare. The only thing I can think of was when I was probably around 12 or 13, we toilet papered the neighbor's house on a dare. We had to go to the neighbor on the left to get toilet paper, like ask for toilet paper. And then we had to toilet paper the neighbors on the other side. So that was probably the dumbest thing that I did on a dare.
That is too funny. I remember that takes me back that I remember when we were at a party one time, we were really young, and we had a scavenger hunt. And one of the items on the list was a used tube of Preparation H.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. And we toilet paper, and we rolled people's houses too.
Oh yeah, that was, you know, the thing to do when we were kids, right?
Sure. All right, fourth question is a would you rather question. And would you rather know the history of every object you touch or be able to speak to animals?
Oh my gosh. I'd rather be able to speak to animals, I think.
See, I thought you would go there. I really did. But I really, as much cool stuff as you have in your YouTube videos and, you know, your photography and everything, I thought, man, maybe she'll go for the, man, if I could touch that, I could just know everything about that object. But talking to animals is, oh my gosh, that would be so awesome.
You know why? I think because for me, if I could touch something, know where it came from or what it went through or whatever, that would be pretty cool. But to be able to talk to the animals and learn how they see us as a species and see what we're doing to the planet and what they think about what's going on, that would be so profound to find that out.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. Well, good, you get an A.
Yay, awesome.
I'm just kidding. There wasn't a grace.
Totally. Those were fun. Those were really fun.
Cool. Okay, so today, what is going on in your life today?
Oh my gosh, so much. So much. I actually just released a YouTube video about the life update of what we are going to be doing this summer. It's absolutely crazy. I call it a beautiful gong show because that's what's going to happen. So what's going to happen, I'm going to be here for the entire month of June in Canada. And then on July 3rd, I fly to Montreal, where I will have my full medical exam and my interview to get my fiance visa, at which point I fly back to Edmonton and Nate flies up to me, and somehow we got to get Chai down to Oregon with him because I won't be able to take him to Oregon. I'll be entering the United States for Woodstock in New York, so I won't be able to take Chai down to Oregon. So Nate's going to do it in July. And then hopefully I get my passport back within the week and I will be able to fly to the UK, where I will attend the UK Fruit Fest, fly back home end of July. And then that first weekend in August, my cousin is coming from BC and she's going to pack up all my stuff in my apartment into her trailer and she's going to store it at her house in BC until I get my paperwork ready to have her drive it down to Oregon. Because I got to get out of my place in August. And the only time I can do that is that first week in August, because I will be leaving Canada mid-August. So after she packs up my stuff, I'm going to be living out of a suitcase. And I'll be going to the Canada Fruit Fest August 9th to 12th. And then I will fly back to Edmonton. And I will basically give my keys up, clean my place, do that final walkthrough of my apartment. I'll probably get rid of my car. It's so old and it needs a lot of work. So I'm just going to give it to Cash for Cars. They'll probably pay me like $300 for it. That's really all it's worth anyways. So I'll get rid of my car and then get rid of my internet, everything I need to do here. And I'll fly to New York for the Woodstock Fruit Festival, at which point I'll be entering the United States on my alien fiance visa. And I'll have to go through immigration, give them all the paperwork and blah, blah, blah. But then that triggers the 90-day fiance. So I have 90 days to marry Nate. And we will be getting married August 24th at the Woodstock Fruit Festival. And then we'll fly back to Oregon together. And I'm not allowed to go back to Canada for at least 6 months while we wait for my green card. And once I get my green card, then I can fly back. For visits and stuff like that. But that is our summer in a nutshell.
Wow.
Yeah.
August the 24th. That's my baby sister's birthday, actually. So it would be an easy one to remember.
Awesome.
Yeah, that is so awesome. I know you have been, I can assume that you have just been chomping at the bits, biting your nails, waiting for this to all go through. And I'm so thankful for you guys. I know that it's just meant to be. It's perfect timing, and it's like I said, it's just meant to be. This time is the perfect time for you two, even though you were wanting it to happen earlier. I think this is the perfect time.
I think so too. And I know, like, from everything that I've ever learned throughout my entire life, is that the universe knows best. And you know, when yes. you're waiting for something or you're trying to manifest something, the universe is arranging everything for your favor and for other people's favors. So like maybe we weren't able to get an apartment or a house or something until September. Maybe they were arranging someone else to get a job offer somewhere where they were going to get more money. So they were waiting until September and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know how it's like the ripple effect? I think that everything is arranged to benefit everybody who's involved. So, you know, there's all different right. kinds of reasons why. And I just like to trust in what the universe has. As long as you're a co-creator with that, with the universe, you know, you're manifesting and you're waiting and hoping, but we just have to also release and let the universe do what it needs to do to arrange the things that we need.
Yeah, it's like that old saying, if you want to make God laugh, just tell him your plans and that'll give him a good circle.
Exactly, exactly. Because when you tell God your plans, he's like, okay, let me arrange some right. stuff. It might take a year or two, but we'll get it done.
Yeah, sure, sure. All right. Well, good. I know, like I said, I know it's exciting for you and I'm excited for you. And I wish with all my heart that we could be there to experience it with you, but I know that it's going to be live streamed and we'll be watching with abated breath and cheering you guys on. It's going to be so awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. And yeah, for the live stream, it won't be on my Instagram. We have some people who are going to help us with that. And the live stream is going to be on Nate's Instagram. And the reason is because I won't have a data package when I go to the United States. I only get 100 megabytes a day and it costs like $12 or something like that. So I won't be able to live stream, but he will be. So we're going to live stream on his Instagram. And then my other friend is going to have my phone and she's going to record the whole wedding on my phone, which I will upload to YouTube after. So that's the dealy there. Great. So it won't be on my Instagram. It will be on me.
For those that don't have Nate's Instagram handle, what would it be so that they know
it's
how to find it?
Raw Natty Nate, and it's Raw Natty and an N and an 8. So not, yeah, sometimes it's hard to remember that one, but Raw Natty Nate.
Awesome. Good deal. Good deal. I want people to be able to find
for
it.
For sure.
So now that we got all the googly stuff out of the way, tell me your story. I just got to say this first. You and Bully Rock Christine, I know I've told you this before, you two were one of the first two that I came across when I started going vegan, I started this vegan lifestyle, and amongst some others, but your story, y'all's stories were just absolutely captivating. The food is absolutely beautiful. And I've bragged about your story before and talked about it. Tell the listeners your story from your point of view. I know they want to hear.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Well, so I started out, like, my mother has always been fairly healthy. She wouldn't eat junk food or processed food or anything like that. But she did consume animal products because she believed she needed all this protein. She followed the blood type diet for a while, but she was very, very clean eater, lots of salads, but again, lots of animal products. So, I always admired her for her health, and I had suffered from candida for many years after I graduated, and she took me to her naturopath where I was diagnosed with candida, and she's like, just go talk to your mom, she can give you the diet, like the anti-candida diet or whatever. So you know, that's when I kind of started dabbling in natural health, and I got a job working at a natural health store as a nutritional consultant and a receiving manager. So I received all of the supplements and I put the price tags on them and stuff. And I helped coach people in the stores ever since. So it was about, 2003. No, maybe even 2001 was when I started. Get in around there. And so I was exposed to a lot of natural health diets and supplements and all of that good stuff. I went to a lot of seminars. My boss, he had a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition, and he taught us a lot. He'd take us out for dinner and teach us a whole bunch of stuff on, you know, how the body works and everything. And I was struggling with food addictions. I was, you know, I wanted to be healthy and I wanted to follow, you know, healthy plans and take supplements. And I did take a lot of supplements. We got a lot of stuff for free. So I would just take a bunch of stuff, but nothing ever really like made me feel amazing. Like, it wasn't the Holy Grail. It was just like stuff I was just taking, and I really didn't get any huge benefits from it. So it was around 2004-ish. I was working on a Sunday, and this older woman came in, and she would talk every Sunday with me. And this one particular Sunday, she was telling me about the 1111 Solaris. And I was born at 1111 a.m. And she was like, you have an amazing path. You are going to change lives and all this stuff. And here I'm thinking, you know, I'm like 24. I'm like, yeah, I'm working in the health industry. I'm going to change lives here, right? I had no idea, like, the scope of what she actually meant. And so we started talking about it more. And she's like, you should really think about doing, like, eating cleaner. And she gave me the book, Professor Arnold Arrett's Mucusless Diet Healing System. And I had a really hard time reading it because it's really old school English. And there's some stuff in there that I don't agree with, like just the way he talks. And there's a lot of like opinions and religious stuff in there too. I just couldn't really get into it, but I loved the idea of being pure, I guess, and eating as clean as possible. So that was my first introduction. And then about a year or two later, we started getting raw vegan cookbooks out. We had Giuliano's Uncooked book, and then David Wolf had a book called The Sun Food Diet Success System when he used to be a raw vegan. And I bought both of those books, and I absolutely fell in love with the lifestyle. So I would try to do raw. I think the longest I went raw was for about 2 months. And of course I fell off that easily. And I was always doing the high fat version, like the gourmet raw foods. So lots and lots of fats, very little fruit. You know, basically mostly fats, really, when I think back on it. I didn't eat, like, I ate salads and stuff, but they were very small. I was calorie restricting because I believed that I needed to calorie restrict to lose weight. And I was yo-yoing with my weight. So I dabbled with the raw food every single time I wanted to, like, clean up my diet or start fresh on Monday. I would always do raw food, and I probably tried to do raw veganism like at least 100 times or more in the next decade, so up till 2014. And all those times I would try, I would fall off within a day or a week or so, maybe.
Now, when you were trying the raw vegan and you kept failing, were you going back to animal-based product foods? Or
yeah, I never had the vegan connection until 2014. I never really understood. Like, I knew what was going on, and I knew why people were vegan, and I had some vegan coworkers and whatever, but I didn't, like, it didn't click. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, now I know why they're vegan, right? I was just like, oh, if I'm going raw, then I'll be vegan. I never actually tried to do like a classic vegan diet. It was always raw, because I considered raw to be like the most clean or whatever. So right. I never had that vegan connection. So when I would fall back, I would definitely go to animal products and junk food because that's what was, you know, natural and convenient, and I love the taste of it and blah, blah, blah. But I, never had that vegan connection. So there were times also in my old journals, when I reread some of my old journals, I'll be like, I want to be raw most of the time, but still be able to have animal products here and there. And I'm just like, my vegan self right now is like, oh my God, girl, come on. Like, it's really hard to be able to do both at the same time. You can't. So then, in about 2012, I was getting up there in my weight, like 185 pounds, and I joined the gym, and I had a personal trainer, and we did this 60-day challenge. It was like everybody in the city at these gyms were entering to win. It was like a trip somewhere or whatever to whoever lost the most. Well, not lost the most weight, but had the best transformation, right? Because some people don't lose as much, but still have a better transformation.
Now, how tall were you at that time, or how tall were you now?
Well, at the time, I was like 5'6" and a half, and now I'm 5'5", and I can't say why I have shrunk. I honestly think that, and this is just my opinion, I have zero explanation for what happened, but I believe that I was so inflamed eating so many inflammatory foods that if you added like a couple of millimeters in between each vertebrae, that could easily add up to be an inch or so, right? Depending on the amount of inflammation in your spine, and your bones and joints and everything. And that's just my own personal thought over it, because I measured myself just like maybe a year and a half ago, and I was 5'5", and I'm like, oh, and I thought I was like a lot taller than that. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, I don't care, but I feel like that was probably contributing to why I was taller. So yeah, and that's just my own personal opinion, but I was 185 pounds and I joined this thing, and my trainer had me on a keto style diet. So it was not quite exactly keto, but it was very close, like a paleo style kind of low carb, really. And I had to write everything in my journal, and I was eating very, very low calorie. I was around 1400 a day, and I was not eating very many carbs. I think the only carbs that I would have would be like steamed broccoli or asparagus, and then oats in the morning, and that was pretty much it for carbs. And so I would go to the gym, and she sent me home twice because I had no energy to actually do the exercises. And she's like, you're just not going to be able to do this. And I was forcing myself to go. Like, I still took rest days like I should. Like, she gave me the whole plan and everything, and I followed it to a T, except I had like no energy and my acne was getting worse. Sure, I felt better because I wasn't eating junk food and I wasn't drinking energy drinks every day because I gave all of that up. So I was feeling a little bit better in that aspect, but my acne was getting worse. My joints were like so inflamed and painful. I could hardly do squats. It hurt so bad. My toes were all inflamed, like really gouty. And so whenever I would try to do lunges, my toes would be like so stiff and they would hurt hardcore. And I was only like 32 at the time, right? And I felt like I was so ancient. But so I did that, and I lost probably about like 20 or 25 pounds by the end of the 2 months. And all I could think about was my reward at the end. And what I wanted out of everything that I could have chosen, I chose a bag of ketchup chips, which I find odd right now, but that's what I was excited to have. So I bought a bag of ketchup chips and I ate those. And it really wasn't all that awesome, because like what I thought it would be. But that ultimately derailed me because I was ingesting all these carbs and fat, and it was really good for what it was. And then I was like, the next day I'll get back to the gym and I'll start doing it again. But then I was like, oh, one more meal. I worked so hard the last 2 months, I deserve whatever. So I would eat something else. And then the next day was the same reasons. I'm like, oh, well, it's the weekend. I can do it one more day, and then I'll start tomorrow. And then tomorrow never came, and I never went back to the gym. I gained all those 25 pounds back plus more. I think at my highest weight that I actually weighed myself was 187. But I do believe that I was higher than that. I just wasn't weighing myself because I was unimpressed with myself, and I was like totally went on a huge binge cycle. And this was when I was eating the worst of my entire life. I was basically eating a bag of Doritos for breakfast. I was eating chicken, like KFC chicken, and those big chunky wedge fries with sour cream for lunch. I was snacking on candy and chocolate bars, 1 to 2 energy drinks a day with coffees. And then dinner, I was making with my ex, we would make like pasta, like an Italian pasta, but it would be loaded with like butter and meat and whatever. And it was like the token vegetables, like a little bit of steamed broccoli and some tomato sauce, because I felt guilty that I didn't have any vegetables all day. So that's basically what I was doing right before. And the energy drinks are really what triggered me. But about 6 months before I went raw, I read a book called The Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx, and so profound.
From Motley Crue?
Yeah,
Nikki Sixx?
Yeah, from Motley Crue. I was reading it because I was like obsessed with Motley Crue, and I really wanted to read that book. And while I was reading it, I was linking all of my food addictions to his heroin addiction. I was like, everything that he said about heroin, I could say about food. And I was like, I'm a food addict. Like, I have serious issues with food. Like, I would have out of body experiences where I would be eating and I would be trying to stop myself from eating, but I would still eat. Like, I wasn't in control of my body. I was a closet eater. I would hide food from my ex, and I would hide alcohol as well. So it was becoming a problem, and I knew it was, but I put the blinders back on because I was like, I don't know how to fix this. You know, my face is full of acne, and all my anxiety is causing me to like pick my face. And I had like horrible, horrible scars and scabs on my face. And so I would try doing like 12-step programs on how to stop picking your face, because that's a problem too. And I was like, I need to figure out how to get rid of these food addictions. Why can I not go back to raw? And then I would try to do raw, but it would last like a day. Right. And so what happened was, one night I woke up, it was September 11th that night, and I was sleeping and my heart was racing out of my chest every single night I would go to sleep. I would say not every single night, but like 95% of the nights. I would wake up around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and my heart would be pounding out of my chest. And I believe this was from the energy drinks and the crappy food I was eating. But I would feel like I was having a heart attack, like dying. And then I wouldn't be able to get to sleep because I would imagine what it would be like to actually have a heart attack. And I'm like, oh God, this is horrible. So I hated going to sleep. It was the worst time because I knew this was going to happen every night. And it did like clockwork. So finally, I woke up that next morning, September 12th. And I was like, that's it. I'm going raw again. And my ex is like, obviously rolling his eyes like, okay, yeah, sure. But this time was different. 2014, September 12th, I sit down and I binge watch Fully Raw Christina's videos. I watched literally all of them. And then in the comments, there were people talking about watching Forks Over Knives, Earthlings, and Cowspiracy. This Cowspiracy was a new release at the time. So I watched all three of those back to back. And I sat back in my chair after crying and feeling all kinds of emotions. And I was like, okay, now I'm a vegan. Like, legit, I was a vegan, like ethically, environmentally, and healthfully. I couldn't deny it anymore. It was so profound in my being that I couldn't do it. But because I always linked veganism with raw food, I naturally just became a raw foodie because that's what all I really knew. I didn't follow any of the like the Forks Over Knives stuff or like the beans, potatoes, or starch solution or anything like that. Never did any of that. And so I went straight to raw. And I stayed raw ever since. So it's almost, in September, it'll be 5 years that I've been a raw vegan. And it was all from that one day. I binge watched Fully Raw Christina. And then from there, I found like Jack from Raw Tropical Living and Ted Carr and, you know, all those people in the realm, right? I found them all out.
Yep.
And then from there, I because I had like 15 years in the natural health industry, I knew a lot. I just never applied any of it to my life, right? Or, you know, we're indoctrinated to need fish oils and eat meat and organic and all this stuff. So I was sort of scared to eat high calorie, but I trusted it. I trusted the low fat. I'd never done the low fat before. So I did low fat, high calorie, and that's what made me stick. And that's yeah. That's how I became a raw vegan.
So you were thinking you're maybe 185 ish at that time. How many calories when you turn raw vegan, how many calories did you I'm sure it took a little while to get that calculated, but how many calories were you eating to lose the weight? You know, let me back up. So I've always heard that if you want to lose if you want to weigh a certain weight, you eat that many calories times 10. That was kind of an old theory. If you want to weigh 200 pounds, you eat 2000 calories. If you want, you know, for a lady, if she wants to weigh 130 pounds, she eats 1300 calories. That cannot be possibly correct. So what did you do?
Well, what I did was when I first started eating raw, because all the experience that I had with raw food was the gourmet high fat stuff. So I really had to find some new recipes that weren't so high fat, or if I did high fat dressings or whatever, I just limited them. And I was eating like fairly decent sized salads, but when I joined some groups on Facebook, everybody was like, you need to eat more. You need to eat. Like, just, they were just saying it to other people. And I was just kind of lurking and reading what everyone was saying. And yeah, the whole consensus was eat more, eat more, eat more. So I was like, okay, I got to eat bigger salads. So I did, and I was eating, I found Chronometer, so I started entering all my calories, and for the first 2 weeks, I was probably only eating like 1,300, but I really wasn't losing a lot of weight, and I never did this for weight loss. I did this because I was feeling horrible, like the sleep, the acne, the joint pain. I just wanted to be healthy. I really wasn't doing it for weight loss. I knew that would come if I was eating properly, so I wasn't really paying attention to my weight in the beginning, but I was eating around like maybe, 1,500 calories or so. And then it only took like 2 weeks before I realized I needed to eat more. So I started making bigger salads, and I was averaging for the entire year, and it was 14 months for me to lose all 70 pounds. I was eating around 2,100 to 2,300 calories a day, but it's not necessarily the calorie amount. It's the fat percentage that makes the biggest difference with weight loss. So if you are, you don't want to undereat, obviously. So you want to aim for 2,000 calories and eat more if you're more active, but it's the fat percentage that's the key. The higher the fat percentage, the more gut dysbiosis can happen and the more fat you store. So, and the more insulin resistance you have. So really, we got to eat low fat.
Wow. That, you know, and that's so funny that, of course, you know, low fat makes sense, but it just kind of throws into the face of everything that's pushed, televised, you know, more protein, less calories, less carbs. And when it's so funny, when people hear carbs, they think of, you know, of course, bread, pasta, potatoes, which I understand, and processed sugar. Yes, I understand that, but they'll even throw fruit in there with it. And that is just a completely ridiculous
thing. Oh, yeah, totally. I know, it drives me crazy when people are like, I did this one What I Ate in a Day video where I had a bowl of fruit for breakfast, which I've been eating for breakfast for the last 5 years. A bowl of fruit, right? Or a smoothie, whatever, in whatever form. Right. But they're like, I had this one video and it was a bowl of fruit and 2 cups of orange juice. And they're like, that is so much sugar. Oh, my gosh, that's so much sugar. And I'm like, well, maybe if you were eating bacon and eggs with that, and the fat from the bacon and eggs is preventing you from actually using that sugar properly, then there's a problem. But if you're just eating fruit, you know, no fat, your body can absorb it and use it so efficiently, as opposed to when there's fat involved with the fruit, then, you know, then your insulin receptors aren't collecting, the sugar properly, because the insulin is like, I can't open the lock because fat's in the way. So that's really the problem. It's not the fruit, it's the fat.
You know, it's so funny. I watched my commercial came on last night, and Angie looked at me and she said, there's your commercial. And it's I always forget the name of the medicine, but it's a medicine for type 2 diabetes. And it's a group of people sitting around and they're talking about type 2 diabetes, and they're all talking about their A1C is under control. And somebody in the leader of the group says, well, did you know that there's also a chance for a heart attack? And they all look dumbfounded. And, you know, it's my favorite commercial, because I want to scream at the TV and think, oh, my gosh, just give me a break. It's a fat problem. It's not a sugar problem. Please.
Yeah. And then you get all of these diabetics who control their sugar from going on a low carb diet. Now, the problem is going on a low carb diet will quote unquote control your sugar by masking it. Because if you're not eating any carbohydrates, then there's no sugar to spike your insulin. So it looks like your insulin is normal. But in reality, if you actually ate, like, there's two different kinds of tests that you can do. You got the blood sugar test, where you poke your finger and you test how much sugar is in your bloodstream. Or there's another test that you can do, which is your blood glucose tolerance test, to see how effective you are at using sugar. Like, how is your insulin working? And most people, I would say almost all people who are doing a low carb, high protein, high fat diet would fail a glucose tolerance test, because the amount of fat that's floating through their interstitial or intracellular muscle fiber cells or whatever, it's called hyperlipidemia. And, you know, mm-hmm. So the fat's blocking insulin from doing its job. So you're going to fail the glucose tolerance test because of the amount of fat that's in your bloodstream. So all you have to do is get rid of the fat, and then you can effectively use the sugar with your insulin. Your insulin becomes sensitive again instead of being resistant.
That's exactly right. And it's, you know, it's simple in anatomy and physiology. And, you know, there are those who, you know, I guess probably think physiology is a little difficult. I find it extremely intriguing, and it's very simple for me to understand, whether it's the heart or the myocellular level and all that. I understand that stuff. So I'm kind of a geek on it, but it's, you know, I break it down basically like you did. You know, the fat coats the muscle cell. It doesn't allow insulin to unlock it to allow the glucose to go in to feed it. So what it does is it just floats around in the bloodstream. Hence, you have diabetes. It's that simple. It's easy.
Exactly. And then there's, you know, people have like levels of diabetes. There's like the syndrome X, and then there's pre-diabetes. It's all the same thing. It's all insulin resistance, really. You know, low blood sugar, people who have low blood sugar issues, that is directly linked with the amount of fats that they're consuming, and they're not actually able to use any sugar that they consume properly. And this is, you know, this is like the problem. A lot of people will be like, oh, well, you know, if I'm hungry or I need a pick me up, I'll have a handful of nuts. And I'm like, no, no, don't have a handful of nuts. There's Dr. Garth Davis posted once on his page about how they actually studied fat and what it does in the body at the time of consumption. They tagged it with like this radioactive material so they could watch what it did in the body. And 100% of the time, it was stored as fat. All fat is stored as fat. It's not used immediately as energy the way sugar is. Sugar is used right away as energy. That's why it's so good to have fruit for breakfast, because you give your body that instant, you know, energy first thing in the morning. But yeah, fat is not an energy source for immediate use. It's actually meant to be stored for later use, because, you know, when we were in times that we needed times of survival, we would just store our fat just in case, and then we use it later. But most of us don't, quote unquote, use it later, because, you know, you're laying at home watching Netflix, you're not using the fat that you ate earlier in the day. So yeah, it's very important that we get that education out there, that it's not the fruit that's causing the problem, it's fat. And I like to have, I have this analogy where there's this murder that happens, and fat and sugar are both at the scene of the murder, but fat runs away and hides, and sugar just so happens to be at the crime scene when the police arrive. So, you know, they apprehend sugar and they take it away, and sugar's like, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, it was fat. But everyone's like, no, you were on the scene of the crime, so it was obviously you. So they build this against sugar, and they're like, it was sugar, sugar was the one that caused the crime or whatever. And fat's just kind of like sitting at home watching the news like, ha, I totally got away with it. And sugar is trying to defend himself and just be like, oh, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, and then goes to jail. And that's basically how we view sugar. We view sugar as like a murderer, basically, like the ultimate crime instigator. So fat totally gets away with it.
Right. And it's so funny that, you know, and I think you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, if we can make three things, you know, our taste buds really look for salt, look for something that's salty, sugary, or fatty. And if we can get a combination of those three, one or two of the other, you know, whatever, we can eat just about
Oh,
anything.
yeah.
And it's, people will more likely than not search for fat and salt and then get a sweet tooth. And so that's why sugar gets, I think, gets the bad rap, is because people are, you know, don't mess with my bacon, my cheese, my, you know, the fat and the salty stuff. But, you know, you can take away the sugary stuff. They can do away with sugary stuff for a little while.
Yeah, exactly. And the fat, the thing is with the fat and this salt, both of those, as well as with sugar, but fat and salt actually secrete a huge amount of dopamine in the brain, because it's a survival mechanism, and we search for really, really dense calories when we're, you know, we need food or whatever. So we tend to default to those fatty, salty things. And a lot of people, what's really interesting is when I ask people what is a bad carb, you know, they name off, obviously, like you said, potatoes, rice, pasta, whatever. But most people will say things like pizza, muffins, pastry, donuts, you know, like Alfredo pasta or whatever, baked potatoes with butter and sour cream. But they fail to realize that all of these options come with half fat. So it's not the carbohydrate that's causing the problem. It's the fact that it comes with half fat. So, and I'm not saying to eat processed sugar, obviously, but if you were to eat like a container of candy, it's not going to cause as many problems. I mean, it's still not good. Don't get me wrong. It's not good. But because it's still going to damage your endothelial cells, like your arteries and your heart and stuff like that, the processed sugar. But if you were to take away the fat, like the candy bar, chocolate bars are half fat, muffins, half fat, pizza, mostly fat. Like it's all fat that they're consuming. So they think it's bad. They demonize carbs when it's really the fat with the carbs that's causing the problem. So yeah, I know we just want that dopamine hit. We want to feel euphoric or something.
Right. And like Nate always says, you know, from the neck up, you enjoy it. As soon as it passes the esophagus, or, you know, down into the esophagus and into the stomach, it wreaks total havoc on you. And, you know, and I've said before, you know, your endothelial lining of your arteries have no feeling receptors at all. Yeah. So they have no clue. You have no clue the damage that's being done until it's usually too late, or you're seeing some warning signs.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the general consensus is that, you know, you go to the doctor and the doctor's like, oh, you're generally healthy. But when the average American is dying from heart disease, cancer, diabetes, stroke, you know, all those top killers, it's like, well, just because the doctor says you're generally healthy doesn't mean that you actually are. It just means your markers are, you know, within a normal range, which is a little high for what actually normal is. So there are problems there. Where people just feel like, oh yeah, well, I can eat whatever because I'm generally healthy. And they feel, the thing with, it really, really bothers me, the term moderation, because people are like, oh, you should never restrict yourself. And it's like, try telling a recovering heroin addict to moderate their heroin use. Or try telling a recovering alcoholic to moderate their alcohol consumption. You can't, you don't do it. When they're in recovery, it means complete abstinence. And the same goes for food, because it's not necessarily what you are addicted to, but if you have addiction personality and you tend to be addicted to certain things, then you really have to consider complete abstinence. And it's not a form of restriction for the people who need to restrict. Like an alcoholic cannot do alcohol in moderation, so they have to be completely abstinent. And once they become completely abstinent, they become free. It's not moderation that gives you that freedom. Like, oh, I could have a little bit of cake here and there. You can't. You just can't. If you have food addiction problems, you can't do it. By being free and being completely abstinent, that is where true recovery happens and true happiness happens and freedom.
You know, that's 100%. You are absolutely 100% accurate. And it kind of leads me into my next question is, being that you've talked about food addiction and alcohol addiction, if you had to pick one of the most significant changes in your life since going raw vegan, that you've noticed, what would it be?
Like health-wise or?
Anything.
You know,
mentally, spiritually, physically,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I would say the freedom. The freedom that I no longer battle in my mind over whether I should eat something or not. I hated that. I hated it so much where, you know, you're driving down the road and it's like, should I go get this? I really shouldn't. I shouldn't do that. Oh my gosh. Should I? Oh, well, you know, yesterday I had some blah, blah, blah. And you have this like half hour debate while you're driving home and it's all you think about. And it's like, I hated that so much. I felt like food was completely in control of me and I couldn't just let it go. So now that I just say no to everything, I am completely free. I feel so much freedom, so much peace within myself, and I don't ever have to worry about it, because if I ever get a craving, it's like, nope, not my food, and I just move on, right? I deal with it. And that has brought so much freedom to my life.
Wow. That is so, it's so funny that you say that, because now that you're saying that, mine's sort of similar since going vegan and now raw vegan, that I spent, I know you know my story, I've told it to you, but I've spent from the time I was 6 years old up till the time that I changed over to the vegan lifestyle, I was told that I can have a heart attack at any time.
Yeah.
And I was petrified that, what is that feeling? Oh no, what is that? What is that? What is that? And That is one weight that is lifted off of me, that the freedom of not ever having to worry about a heart attack again is so amazing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And that it makes me sad when people say, well, I don't want to restrict myself. And I'm like, well, but it's freedom. Like, you don't understand. When you actually get rid of those things, it's so freeing. Like, you're just like, now I can breathe and I don't have to worry. And it's like, it's so blissful to not have to have that battle go on in your mind anymore. Or like the worries, like you said, like worried about this or worried about that, worried about your health, just because you want to have something tasty, right? Like, I have plenty of tasty recipes that I can make that are raw, and I don't have to deal with the aftermath of choosing something that I know is going to further trigger my addictions and cause me to feel like not my best.
Yeah, that's so accurate. So accurate. And so funny that you just mentioned it. It's almost like you're reading my mind. My next question to you was, I know you have mentioned so many times about having your five go-tos, you know, your go-to if you are coming home and you just don't feel like cooking and you don't feel like doing anything, but you have five go-to things, recipes that you could cook. What would be your go-to, the number one thing that you would go to, and on a scale from 1 to 10, you know, 1 being the easiest, 10 being the hardest, how would you rate it as a difficulty?
Okay, my number one all-time favorite recipe that I could eat all the time and never ever question it, it's always going to be good, and I've had it for the last 5 years, and is my French dressing. And on a scale of 1 to 10, what did you say, 10 being easiest?
No, 10 being the hardest, 1 being
one. It's like a 2 or 3. It's like so incredibly easy to make. I can make this salad in 10 minutes faster than it takes me to order a salad and get it delivered to my door, or walk down to like the store that has like organic salads and pay like $17 for salad. It's cheap, it's easy, it's quick. I always have the ingredients on hand, and I know for a fact that I'm going to love it. It's 5 or 6 dates, clove of garlic, a juice of a lemon, a little apple cider vinegar, some smoked paprika, and some chipotle powder. That's it. It's so easy. Blend that with some water, and I pour it over a chopped salad, and it's perfect.
Guess what? We just went to the store and bought
what?
All of those ingredients because I'm having tonight.
Awesome. 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 Yeah. See, the French dressing, how that one came about, that was actually like the first recipe that, like, when I made it, honest, like, to be completely honest, I actually started crying when I was eating it. I was sitting at my computer desk, and my ex was having a hard time with some of the raw stuff because he had gone vegan with me. But he never stayed vegan after we split up. Like, the weekend that we split up, he ate bacon. So goes to show how ethical it was for him. But I was having a hard time with the dressings that he wanted on his salads and stuff. So I'm like, well, he's Italian, so he really liked like vinaigrettes, kind of. So I'm like, well, how can I make a vinaigrette without oil? Like, you can't really do it. Per se. So I was thinking, okay, so what are the ingredients of a vinaigrette? You've got like a sugar, you have an oil, and you have your spices, and your vinegar, obviously. So I was thinking, well, if I blended dates together and I added enough water, it would have sort of the consistency like emulsified, kind of like oil blended with sugar, kind of. So I was like, I'm going to try just blending dates together and add a lot of savory to it. So I added the lemon juice to give it the sour. I added the apple cider vinegar to make it more like a vinaigrette, kind of. And then I added the smoked paprika and garlic. And you could add any other spices you want to that or whatever. And I blended that up. And I made it a little bit more vinaigrette-y, like I added some more water to it, so it was a little bit more runny. But I poured that over my salad, and I sat at my computer desk, and I was literally crying because I loved it. So I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe how good this is. And from that day, that's been my absolute number one dressing. I will make that when I'm tired. I'll make that when I, you know, I'm bored and I don't want to. Or if I don't feel like making anything in the kitchen, like, I'll just be like, oh, I'll just blend that up. It's super easy. So, yeah.
It's the first recipe that I ever watched of yours. or one of the first recipes that I remember. No, it was the first recipe that I ever watched of yours, and that I had to rewind it or, you know, start back over. And I said, oh, how'd you do that? And I had to, you know, make sure that I had everything that you had. And I think I was missing, oh God, what was I missing? I think I was missing, I think I had just had paprika at the time, not smoked paprika. Anyway, and I tried it and I was like, oh my gosh, because I love French dressing. I love it. It was so great to have a fat-free dressing that tasted that good.
Right.
And I was, oh, so.
I'm really glad you loved it. Yeah, when I found that out, I was like, I could make a recipe book. And so that's kind of what started the whole recipe book deal, was that specific dressing.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. All right. Well, last question. So we're at a party. Okay. And I'm in the room and you're there, and somebody comes over to you and says, hey, you see that guy over there? That's Trey. And he is not a vegan. He eats animal products, but he's interested. He's interested, but he's not a vegan.
Okay.
You have to switch me over to vegan that night, whether it be for lifestyle, ethical, health, whatever it is, give me your best sales pitch.
Oh my goodness. Oh, geez. Well, oh my gosh. I would probably say, if we're at a party, I would probably choose like one of the dishes there that would be vegan, or like the veggies or something. And I might go up to you and say, like, have you tried like this dish or whatever? Like, what did you think about it? And, you know, get your reaction and be like, did you know that it was vegan? I had no idea. And then, you know, hear what you had to say and be like, I've been thinking about going vegan. I'm really, really leaning towards it, or something, and see how you react. And the thing is, it's all in how the person reacts. Like, if you're going to react negatively towards it, then it gets really difficult as to what to say, right? But, you know, if you're genuinely intrigued, then I would probably say, like, you know, if you start asking questions, I would tell you to watch those movies, like What the Health, Earthlings, Forks Over Knives, Cowspiracy. And the thing is, when I'm doing outreach or talking to people about veganism, I always use the Socratic approach. So if somebody asks me a question, I return the question back to them. So if they say, well, where do you get your protein? I will send it back to them and say, where do you think I get my protein? And see what they answer with, because most people don't know. And if you catch them in the fact that they don't actually know, then their guard goes down and they're more likely to ask for the real answer because they just don't know, right? Some people will ask me, they'll be like, well, why did you choose to be vegan? I'll say, well, why do you think that I became vegan? What do you believe about vegans? Why do you think vegans become vegans? You know, and then they sit back and they're like, well, that's a good question, right? Because they don't actually know. They're expecting the answer from you. So if you make them think for themselves, they naturally come to the same conclusion that you do. So, you know, they're going to say, like, well, if you were on a deserted island with a pig and that's all you could eat, would you eat the pig? And I'd be like, well, would you eat the pig? And I'll say, like, do you know what would happen if you ate the pig? Like, if you killed the pig, A, there's no refrigerator there. You can't store the meat past, like, a couple hours. If it's a deserted island, it's probably in the tropics somewhere, and it's probably really hot, and that meat's going to rot really fast. So how much meat are you actually going to eat off this pig, right, when you're on this deserted island? And then what are you going to eat after the pig rots? What are you going to eat after that? Like, it's just, like, your one meal, really. So
it's always the go-to, yeah, you know, the deserted island. And that,
it is totally. Yeah, but yeah, I would probably just approach you with a lot of kindness and a lot of questions, because the person who asks the questions is in control of the conversation. So I would definitely ask you a lot of questions and get your opinions. And then, you know, when you ask questions that require me to answer them, I would sometimes answer again in a question, like, they'd be like, well, where do you get your calcium? You could say, did you know that bok choy is very high in calcium? Because that's a question, right? But you're giving them the answer in the form of a question, And they're like, no, I did not know that. That's very interesting, right? And then it's a lot easier to convert someone using that approach.
You're right. It is. And I usually ask the same, you know, if they ask me, where do I get my protein? I just, well, where does your protein get its protein?
Yeah, I know. I really like that one too. That's a good one.
That's one of my favorite. My brother-in-law recently asked me, you know, we were talking about his health, and he asked me, he said, hey, you know, you mean to tell me I can get off all these medications? And I said, absolutely. You can get off these medications. You know, you have type 2 diabetes, you're taking medication for that. And you're taking medication for statins for your cholesterol. And he asked me, it was almost like it was a shock to him that it was possible to get off of it. And I told him, absolutely. So now, you know what, Angie was up there, you know, this was, Angie's mom, you know, we were up there with her, you know, before she passed, and right. she was with her brother, and we were talking with him, and honestly I wrote him down the ingredients for my green smoothie that I eat or that I drink every morning, and it's on his refrigerator, and you know, he eats or drinks that every morning now.
Wow. And so that's impressive.
No, right? It is. And I overheard him talking on the phone. You know, he called her, how many cups of flax seeds do I put in here? And, you know, so it's very exciting.
That's awesome. I know. It's so, the thing is that, you know, when people will say like, oh, you vegans try to push your opinions down our throats and blah, blah, blah. It's like, we're not trying to like be all mean and everything, but we're just trying to help you because we actually care about you and we want you to be healthy, and we have found this truth and we want to share it, but people are so closed off and so not ready. But it's all good because they will be ready in their own time, and we will be there for them when they decide to.
That's right. It seems like the harder you push, the harder they pull away. And
yeah,
you know, if you let them come to it, they'll come to you.
Oh yeah, because they're watching. The thing that people don't realize is that other people are watching them like hawks, whether they know it or not. When I once posted on my page that I was so incredibly grateful for all the people that I've met through coaching, because I've become friends with a lot of my coaching clients. And so I posted this, you know, like, you know who you are. You're so awesome. Thank you for being my friend. And my uncle, who owns like a meaty restaurant, like a diner kind of thing, and he's a chef, and he always makes like the ham for Christmas dinner, and you know, they would eat a lot of, he taught me the bacon carbonara, like dairy induced coma of a sauce, you know, to put on filet mignon and stuff like that. So he eats pretty heavy. And he was one of the last people that I would ever think would ever go vegan. And he replied to my status, and he said, you inspire us to eat raw foods or something like that. I was like, what? So I messaged him, and they had both been on like a juice fast, and they were eating a lot of raw foods because of me just living my life and sharing my journey on social media. And people are so much more intrigued when you just live your life and you are happy and they want what you have. Even my dad, like the last person on the planet, you know, he's been eating more raw foods for lunch. He's been making stuff out of my book. Like, I'm just so happy to see stuff happen, but you know, it takes a lot of time, but people do change, and we have to change as a society. Otherwise we're screwed.
We do. And I'm going to be posting a video. We're up here in Colorado, and I just posted it. I just made a video of our little travel up to the Rocky Mountain National Park. And I sat down, I found a little spot, a quiet spot. And I sat down and I told my story. And, it's funny that you said that, because I thought back, in the video, I mentioned that, you know, we're given all of the tools, you know, God has given us every tool to take care of ourselves, take care of the planet. And it's all natural, not processed. It just seems like anytime we get in the way, we talked about earlier about, you know, anytime we think it's, you know, it's, we know God's plan, you know, he's going to laugh at us. But, you know, we took all of these resources and kind of created our own food and whatnot. But all this stuff is plentifully given to us, and we kind of just wreck it. And we're given all the tools, and we just we wreck it, our body and the planet, and we can easily turn this thing around, easily.
Oh yeah, we definitely could. We just need more people. We need more voices out there. So I'm really grateful for your voice being added to the voices. We just really, really, really need more people out there. Like, the vegan circle is super small, and then we've got these people who are leaving veganism and influencing others to leave veganism, and it's not healthy for our planet, and we're just not going to be able to sustain that kind of a lifestyle. So we have to change, and the more voices we have, the better. But not being mean voices, obviously, being like inspirations and love and light and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's why I like the term inspiration as opposed to influence. I mean, I consider you an inspirational person. I consider Nate, and, you know, those are inspirational people. Influencers are, you know, I hate to put them in that category, but that's a different, to me, that's a different category for me. And I just don't follow.
Whoops. Sorry. My cat knocked my phone.
Oh, Sai. Oh, Chai Chai. My daughter's cat's name is Sai. That's right. That's where I got that from.
Cute.
His name is Sai. He's so sweet. He looks just like Chai. A younger version looks just like him.
Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah, I'm so in love with that cat. He's like turning 19 here. So he's an old one.
Well, we're going to wrap it up, girl. How can folks find you? How can they find Miss Lissa? Let us hear all of your litany of location.
My whole spiel. Okay, so I am most active on Instagram. You can find me at Raw Food Romance. And Twitter, I do daily raw formations. I haven't been doing them lately, but I do them. That is also at Raw Food Romance. My YouTube channel and Facebook are both Lissa's Raw Food Romance. And Snapchat is Lissa Raw Vegan. I also have, right now, I have 4 recipe books out and a transition guide on how to transition your life over to more raw vegan lifestyle. Those are all available as ebook versions on my website, payhip.com/rawfoodromance. And you can get print versions of all the recipe books on Amazon. I am coming out in the fall with a new meal plan. It's going to be meal plan volume 3, where I am not using any nuts or dehydrator. You can use a dehydrator, but it's not necessary. So there's that one. And it's also going to be an e-course immersion. It's going to be called Lissa's Raw Immersion, where you will get 30 kitchen videos where I prepare all 90 recipes on video for you to see the size of everything and how I prepare. And then you're getting 30 informational videos on the lifestyle and how to change. It's going to have a lot to do with food addictions and releasing that and mindset and all that. And then we're going to do 30 meditation videos. And this whole package will be about $157. And that's going to be released in the fall. And if you don't want to do the e-course, you can always just buy the next meal plan, obviously, which will be $22 for the ebook. So, yeah, those are all my things.
Wow. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but based on my experience, for those out there that are listening, Lissa is a gracious, wonderful, affectionate, and infectious person. And if you reach out to her, you know, it may not be right away, but she will reach back out to you. And it's an absolute treasure of information that she can provide for you. So please don't hesitate. If you have a question, I'm sure she would be more than happy to answer.
Oh yes. I try my best to answer everybody. Like you said, I can't always get back to people right away, but I try my best to answer absolutely every single person. It's really hard. Like, the more followers I get, the harder it gets, but I do try really hard to give everything I can. But I do also offer one-on-one coaching. So if people really wanted like to get a 1 hour of my time where we could like discuss stuff or whatever, I do that. It's going to be, going up to $75 an hour in June. So there's that too.
Awesome. Wealth of knowledge, y'all. Wealth. I mean, it is. You just go look at her page, go look at her before and afters, her story. It's her food. Oh my gosh. And it doesn't hurt that she's an artist too and a photographer. It's beautiful.
Oh,
beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. My recipe books are my babies. They are so special to me. So yeah, I'm glad that people enjoy them.
Yes. Well, Lissa, again, it has been an absolute honor. absolute honor to have you on here. And I'm so thankful that you said yes to the interview. And I'm so thankful that you gave your story and little pieces of information that might just help somebody turn that corner with addiction, whether it be with food, with alcohol, whatever the case may be. It's an absolute treasure.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for asking me. It was such a pleasure to be on. And I do love sharing as much as I can with everybody.
I know you do. And for those out there, please, everybody is going to be a statistic one day. And if you're going to be a statistic, please be a good one. Make good choices, make good decisions. Okay. And for that, I bid you adieu and hope to talk to you later, Miss Lissa.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All righty, dear. Take care.
You too.